You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Vadim Jean's new documentary film, In the Land of the Free, chronicles the ongoing struggle for justice for Herman Wallace, Albert Woodfox, and Robert King, the so-called Angola Three, who spent a combined century of their lives in solitary confinement in Angola, the Louisiana State Penitentiary. They were targeted by prison officials for being members of the Black Panther Party and accused of murdering a prison guard despite evidence to the contrary. Woodfox and Wallace remain behind bars to this day, while Mr. King has since been released. The film, which is narrated by Samuel L. Jackson, will be screened at 6:30 this evening and then again tomorrow night at 9 at the Walter Reed Cinema at Lincoln Center, 165 West 65th Street, as part of the Human Rights Watch International Film Festival. I'm very pleased to welcome both Vadim Jean and Robert King to our show today. Hello.
Thank you for having us.
So let's begin with you, Vadim. Can you tell us a bit about the Angola Three, who they were and why they were arrested?
I first heard about the story from Anita Roddick, who founded the Body Shop Stores. And when she told me that these three men had spent between them over a century in solitary confinement in America today, I couldn't believe that that could be the case. And when I found out more about the story, I discovered that they had been, Herman and Albert had been accused of the murder of a prison guard in 1972. And reading the court transcripts, that it seemed as if a terrible miscarriage of justice had occurred, and that there were things that the jury didn't know about the case. They hadn't been told that the main witness seemed to have been bribed by promise of his freedom and a carton of cigarettes a week, and that a bloody fingerprint at the scene of the crime had proved not to belong to them, and that no effort was made to test the fingerprint against the rest of the prison population. And that catalogue of things made me think, okay, something's gone wrong here.
Well, how did they come to be accused of murdering this prison guard named Brent Miller?
Angola in the early 70s, as I'm sure Robert will tell you, was a terrible place. And Herman, Albert, and Robert were very active in trying to change the conditions of the prison, and I think that made them targets.
Robert, what were you originally arrested and imprisoned for?
Initially, first of all, thank you, Leonard. Appreciate being here. And I was initially arrested early 1970, for an armed robbery, in which I subsequently went to trial and was found guilty. And
were you already a member of the Panthers?
By the time I got to Angola, I had become a member of the Black Panther Party. While in the New Orleans Parish Prison, I came in contact with members of the Black Panther Party. Sometime in 1970, there was a shootout, or what they call a shootout in New Orleans, between the New Orleans Police Department and the newfound Black Panther Party. At the time, they called himself, there was a branch of the Black Panther Party. It was the National Committee to Combat Fascism, NCCF, and then it was later learned that they were members of the Black Panther Party, actually a wing up party. So I joined the party at that time while I was in the Paris prison.
Were you in Angola when Brent Miller was murdered?
No, I was not. As a matter of fact, I was in New Orleans, Louisiana, 150 miles away. Had never met the man before. I was not in a man prison population, hadn't been at that time, but I was suspected of, you know, having played a part in this.
How? If you weren't there, how did you become a member of the Angola Three?
Well, and that's the crux, I can imagine. But this is how that happened. We became members of the Angola Three by association. Not that we were charged with the same crime. As Vadim pointed out, Herman and Albert was charged in the alleged death of Brent Miller along with two other inmates. At that time, it was known as the Angola Four. Two other inmates, Gilbert Monique Q and Chester Jackson. And later on, it became Chester Jackson, the case as the film evolved, Chester, what took place, the conspiracy between the so-called perpetrators and the administration, and how Herman and Albert were, you know, placed in this position.
Well, what were you tried for?
Well, and this is the thing. I was only, at the time, considered a suspect. And again, I was not in Angola, but I was considered a suspect. And I had 35 years. So I was in Angola I was in the CCR, in the place where Herman and Albert were as well, because I was a member of the Black Panther Party. By the time they sent me to New Orleans, from New Orleans to Angola, it was known that I was a member of the Black Panther Party, had joined the Black Panther Party.
So this is really being tried for being a member of the Black Panther Party.
In essence and in facts, you can say this is the same case with Albert. It's just being a member of the Black Panther Party. I was found guilty by association. They couldn't find me guilty on charges of murdering Brent Miller. But there was an inmate that was killed in self-defense some years later, about 3 years later after I was in CCR, and I was there being held on conspiracy, I imagine, some theory of conspiracy to have committed a murder that I was not even in Angola. But they couldn't try me for this. But they did manage to involve me in the death of an inmate who was killed in self-defense by another inmate.
But this sounds to me like the sort of thing lawyers can take care of quite easily. They had a very weak case against you. What kind of defense did you have?
At the time, it wasn't really no defense, not much of a defense, because when they charged me with alleged participating in the death of another inmate who was obviously killed by an inmate in self-defense, they had just appointed me a lawyer, wanted to send me to trial without even consulting with the lawyer, not giving any time to do so. And we were both tried together. We were tried in Louisiana, in St. Francisville, Louisiana. And we were taped at that time. Our mouth was taped, and we were shackled, and we were handcuffed behind our back. And we were
set there in the courtroom?
In the courtroom before a jury, even before the jury was selected. Prospective jurors saw us in that position. And so we were... You know, we were tried that way. It took 3 days, but we were tried that way and found guilty.
And what was the jury like? Were you tried by a jury of your peers?
Nah, that's crazy. Nah, it's just mere words. No, they were not jurors of my peers. They were people who lived, who was born and raised in St. Francisville, Louisiana, in the southern state, that many didn't realize that they exhibited racism blatantly and subconsciously as well, and you could not tell them that they were racist. It was a certain tradition that they acted upon, and so what exacerbated this, if you were in Angola convicted of a crime, and if you went before a jury that was automatically picked from that area, St. Francisville, they automatically found you guilty.
Well, why did they put you in solitary confinement?
They placed me in solitary confinement because I, again, as I pointed out, I had become a member of the Black Panther Party, and they knew this.
So they were just preventing you from meeting with other prisoners because you were a bad influence?
I imagine that became the thought later, but prior to that time, it was the idea to put all of us, any person, individual prisoner that was considered a militant, it was the idea to place them in a certain segregated area. So I was placed in a segregated area being considered a, quote, militant.
And how big was your cell?
It's 6 by 9 by 12.
So we're talking about a fairly small space. I imagine a space that felt very confining and wasn't always aired out as well as it could be. How many years did you do this?
It was a total of 31 years, 29 in Angola, but 31 in total.
I think it's one of the things that struck me about the story was I couldn't understand how what the solitary or CCR is supposed to be a short-term punishment, supposed to be reviewed.
They said it drives you crazy if you stay in solitary confinement for too long. You don't seem to be crazy, but I'm sure that some other people have
been crazy.
Very seriously.
He's definitely crazy.
You've been spending some time with him and you know.
Yeah, he drives us all crazy.
Yeah, that question asked Leonard, of me all the time. People ask the question that they kind of pivot around it every now and then. They want to know why I'm not crazy, why you didn't go crazy, why aren't you insane? I let them know, Leonard, hold up, I didn't tell you I wasn't insane. I think
Well, that takes care of that.
Yeah, I think it's hard to get dipped in waste and not come up stinking. You know what I'm saying? So I think I was impacted by it, but I wasn't impacted to the degree, that it would impact, me from doing certain things that I know needed to be done.
Well, people were working on the outside to get you out mm-hmm. because they recognized this was a miscarriage of justice. First of all, is it possible for a filmmaker to get into Angola?
We asked many times if we could interview Herman and Albert, who, of course, at that time were still there in solitary. And we were turned down. Eventually, after much persistence, the local crew managed to get us 1 hour outside the main gate. But I think it's kind of ironic, you know, that I couldn't get, by the end, I'd been banned from every prison in Louisiana, you know, which is ironic given that this is the highest per capita incarceration in the world.
You got to interview the widow of the dead man, Brent Miller's widow, and that's very, very moving part of the film.
Tini, I think, is a remarkable woman. She was presented with the evidence, probably for the first time a few years ago, and she found that she had to ask the question. It seemed to her that particularly the bloody fingerprint that was never tested against the whole of the prison population where they had every fingerprint, she asked herself that question and said, you know what? She's got doubts about whether or not it's a correct conviction. And, you know, she needs justice too. She needs to find out who really killed her husband.
How did you conduct the interviews with Albert and Herman?
Albert and Herman gave telephone, made phone calls to prison radio. Mm. And that we had those were available to us. And that was all we had to be able to talk to them.
And you chose to leave the audio of the automated voice on the phone. You have 1 minute remaining in the film.
Well, I think, you know, it's an intrusive thing. I mean, for me, that symbolizes the fact that there is no privacy. Mm. You know, every phone call they make is recorded by the authorities. You know, there is no, you're denied even that right, the right to talk to somebody without being listened to.
Are you still in touch with Herman and Albert, Robert?
Oh, yes, for sure.
How are they doing?
Matter of fact, they're doing, under the condition, the circumstance, they're doing okay. I talked to Albert about 2-3 days ago, and he's doing pretty well. He's looking forward to, you know, as Vadim pointed out, the court has overturned Albert's conviction, and his expectation is kind of high, of course, you know, but he's in prison.
Well, how did you get out?
Well, actually, the people who, there was evidence that the warden had took part in framing me. He had got some folks to say that I participated in the death of this correctional officer, not correctional officer, but an inmate that had been killed. The correctional officer that morning indicated and saw the incident and during the trial pointed out that he didn't see me do anything. Nevertheless, they got an inmate to say that I had participated in the murder, despite the fact that we went to trial and the inmate who had actually killed a guy in self-defense said that I didn't have anything to do with it. That was during the second trial. He could not do this during the first trial because I was handcuffed. We were both handcuffed, shackled, and taped. We could not even testify in our own defense.
And your lawyers?
And the lawyers objected, and I think this would make the Supreme Court overturn the decision. But it was overturned, the state court overturned it based on not that I was innocent, but on procedure.
Well, people did get involved, State Representative Cedric Richmond, and then John Conyers, the chair of the House Judiciary Committee, also got involved. So what was it like walking out of Angola?
Well, you know, the day that I walked out of Angola, it was unexpected. It was a surprise, but it was pleasant. I used to only dream about getting out of Angola. I had hopes of getting out of Angola, but I had life without the possibility of parole and a probation or suspension of sentence. So it felt good getting out.
We have a little clip from the film. Mm-hmm.
Robert King is a free man. Mr. Woodfox is in the right direction. Herman Wallace, I know, is resourceful enough to take advantage of this trend. But their lives have been ruined. To be incarcerated for 3 or 4 decades and say, well, oh, it was a mistake and I'm glad we caught it, sorry about that. You can go now. What do you do with the life and the ambitions and the hopes and the family circumstances of someone who's had to suffer this kind of injustice rather than justice.
That was John Conyers, the chair of the House Judiciary Committee. So how do you remain so positive after all that happened?
Well, you know, I think I remain positive because I changed my mindset, my idea about prison. And plus, I had become politicized. I understood, you know, the nature of my confinement. I understood why. I understood the historical significance. And I think making all of these connections, I realized that this was part of the puzzle. And I felt this, that people were defining me or were saying things about me that were not true. And I think I stayed positive because I wanted to expose this. I wanted to, if an epitaph was to be written of me, I wanted it to be sort of written by me. So I kept positive. I remained positive.
About him, everyone seems to agree this is a miscarriage of justice all around, and yet the other two members are still in jail. Is the state of Louisiana resisting letting them out?
When Albert's conviction was overturned in September 2008, the state of Louisiana decided to contest the overturning. And 18 months later, Albert is still waiting for the result of the three-judge panel to confirm whether it will be overturned or not. They are resisting. I don't really know why, in the face of the evidence that most people, when they read it, you know, come to the conclusion that most people seem to, which is that there seems to be this miscarriage of justice. You know, Herman and Albert are still in a terrible, terrible place. You know, but they are incredible.
But not in solitary confinement.
Yeah, they're still in solitary confinement. Yes, only months after Albert's conviction was overturned, they were put back into CCR. They are still today in CCR, in those conditions. And that's a cruel and unusual punishment, you know, in direct contradiction of the 13th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution.
You feature Louisiana Attorney General Buddy Caldwell in the film. Does he have the power to release them? Or would Governor Bobby Jindal, who is much in the news today for other reasons?
It seems to be Buddy Caldwell who is the person who's decided to contest the overturning. So in the sense that he's made that decision. If Buddy were to decide not to proceed, then Albert would be released, which is what we're all hoping for.
I want to thank you both for being with us today. I've been speaking with Vadim Jean, the director of a film called In the Land of the Free about the Angola Three, and with Robert King, one of the Angola Free, the only one who has been freed. The film, which was narrated by Samuel L. Jackson, will be screened at 6:30 this evening and then tomorrow at 9 at the Walter Reed Cinema at Lincoln Center. That's at 165 West 65th Street. It's part of the Human Rights Watch International Film Festival. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Up next, our Word Maven Patricia T. O'Connor takes your calls on the confounding English language that we try to speak. And if you have a question, you can give us a call at 212-433-9692 or leave a comment on our show page. The Tony Awards were announced on Sunday, and you can listen to my interviews with some of the winners by going to our show page. This is WNYC and WNYC.org.